Chapter 13. The navigator sent down a message to say that smoke was in sight. The next hour was full of anxiety, but by hauling off to port we managed to lose it. At daylight on the second day my position was still miserable. The battery was getting low again, the sea had gone down, and when I put my periscope up at 9 a.m., the horizon seemed to be ringed with patrols. I felt as if I was in an invisible net, and though I endeavored to conceal my apprehension from the crew, all the forenoon we crept along at 30 meters, until the tension was broken at 1 p.m. by a furious depth charge attack. The first charges were some little distance off, and as they got closer a feeling of desperation overcame me, and I contemplated surfacing and fighting to the last with my gun. I dived to 114 meters. At this exceptional depth, three rivets in the pressure hull began to leak, and jets of water with the rigidity of bars of iron shot into the boat. I held on for 5 minutes, which was sufficient to save me from the depth charge attack, though two which went off almost above broke some lamps. I then came up to 20 meters and slowly crawled on. Throughout the long afternoon, though we were not directly attacked again, I heard depth charges on several occasions sufficiently close to demonstrate that these devils had an idea of the area I was in. By a supreme effort, working one motor at the only speed it would go, dead slow, I managed to squeeze out the battery until dusk. I surfaced. It was not as dark as I had hoped, and saw a large sloop-like vessel 8,000 meters away, on the port beam. She must have seen me simultaneously, as the flash of a gun darted from her, the shell falling short. I couldn't dive. There seemed only one thing to do. Fight, then die. I ordered the gun's crew up, and the unequal duel began. We were going full speed on the diesels, and my course was east by north. A good deal of water and spray was flying over the gun, and my crew had little hope of doing much accurate shooting. Our enemy was armed with two large guns, 15 centimeters or over, but had no speed, a discovery which raised my hopes again. If we could survive 10 minutes shelling, we should be saved for the time being by the fading light, which was causing our enemy difficulties, as his shots alternated between very short and very much over. I was actually congratulating the navigator on our escape, and I had just told the gun's crew to cease firing, when there was a sheet of yellow flame, and a jar which threw me against the signal man. The latter had been standing near the conning tower hatch. I knocked him off his balance, and he fell with a thud into the upper conning tower. By the worst of luck, a shell had hit the gun just below the port trunnion. The result of the explosion was severe. Four of the seven men at the gun had been blown overboard. The breech worker was uninjured, though dazed. I expected to see him fall over the side at any moment. The remaining two men were as dead as horse flesh. The gun had almost been thrown out of its cradle, but the trunnion blocks had held firm, and the whole pedestal had been carried over to starboard. An hour later we had shaken off the sloop. I saw red flame on the horizon, which indicated flaming at the funnel from some destroyer looking for us at high speed. I dived, intending to surface again, as soon as possible. With this intention in my head, I did not go below the upper conning tower. We had barely got to 10 meters, when loud cries from below and the disquieting noise of rushing water told me that something was wrong. I blew all tanks, surfaced, left the first lieutenant on watch and went below. There were 5 centimeters of water on the battery boards, and I understood at once that we could never dive again. The pedestal of the gun, in being forced over, had strained the longitudinal seam of the pressure hull to which it is bolted, and a shower of water had come through as soon as we got under. Chlorine gas suddenly began to fill the fore end. The salt water running down into the battery tanks had found acid, and though I ordered quantities of soda to be put down into the tank, it became, and still is at the moment of writing, impossible to move forward of the conning tower without putting on a gas mask and oxygen helmet. We have no gun. We cannot dive. The English must know that they have hit us, and every hour I expect to see the hull of a destroyer climb over the horizon astern. For the time being, the weather seems to promise well, and our diesels are sound. We are ordered to Zeebrugge. It does not matter, as I cannot believe we are intended to escape. Diary of a U-Boat Commander.